for this opportunity. It's a huge blessing to me to be able to come up here and do this. When Daryl and I work together, my words start fairly early in the morning, and Daryl's don't start until at least 10. So we would start off in the morning, and I would have all kinds of things I wanted to talk through. And, you know, Daryl's a pastor, so I've got his ear right next to me in the truck, and I would go after it. He'd go, Bob, you don't understand. I can't do this early in the morning. I'd say, then Daryl, just listen, and as soon as you can kick in, kick in. Anyway, that was a great time. That was a lot of fun. So this morning, we are in James chapter 4, verse 11 and 12. That's our passage. And I feel very honored to be able to speak on this morning, because this subject touches all of us in very significant ways. And it's touched my life in very significant ways. So as we go down this journey, I am very excited and just looking forward to how all this lands. If you want to go ahead and put our text up there, James 4, 11 and 12, don't speak evil against each other, dear brothers and sisters. If you criticize and judge each other, then you're criticizing and judging God's law. But your job is to obey the law, not to judge whether it applies to you. God alone who gave the law is the judge. He alone has the power to save or to destroy. So what right do you have to judge your neighbor? You know, I didn't realize when I was early on in my life, I didn't realize the implications of judging. Just tell you a quick little story. When I was a senior, when I was at Christ for the Nations, after graduating from high school, I'd been raised in a Christian home. I got there, and I was pretty proud of the things that I knew. And as a family, we were raised in an environment where we didn't go to doctors, we didn't go to dentists, which is not a good thing, but at that time it seemed very spiritual. And if we had something that went wrong in our lives, we would pray, we would seek the Lord, and you know, we went through quite a few things, which I'm not going all the way down that road. But you know, the reason that we believe that is because we were missionaries in Mexico, and we're working in Mexico, and we're praying for people, and we're seeing God heal people, and we're seeing all kinds of great things happen, and we adopted a theology that that's how God did stuff. He heals you, and if he's not healing you, something's wrong with you. That's how we looked at it. So I'm at Christ for the Nations, and this guy, one of my friends, says, man, I have such a toothache. I've not had a toothache like this before. I said, wow, that's a bummer. I've never had a toothache. And he said, really? I said, yeah, I've never even been to a dentist. And he said, wow, that's not something to be proud of. But I was proud of it. You know, the next morning I woke up. So I woke up the next morning, I had a throbbing toothache. And my mouth was actually black and blue right here and swollen. And you know what? The first thing that came to my mind was my comment to this guy yesterday. And I was in desperate pain. And I realized right away, you know what? That cocky spirit that I walked in yesterday, that stupid judgmental spirit that I had yesterday, that was not okay. And you know what? Because we didn't go to doctors, we didn't use aspirin, we didn't use ibuprofen, I didn't even know what it was. And I've got this massive toothache, and it's a Saturday, and I'm calling dentists. I prayed, but I was in such desperate pain, I'm looking for a doctor. I'm looking for a dentist. I'm looking for somebody to help me.
And I, the dentists were closed. I didn't even know what an ER was at that point. I'm just there praying. Different guys came in and prayed for me at Christ for the Nations. And the pain did not subside. And I am praying, and I'll tell you something that happened while I'm praying and realizing that this is a direct result of my judgment that I was walking in. This subject became alive to me. This subject became real to me in a very significant way at 17 years old. I recognized, and I began to pore over this subject and began to realize, you know what? Don't judge. It doesn't work out well. So, you know, the scriptures teach us that what we walk in places us in a spiritual arena. I'm not exactly sure how to describe or articulate that, but what we walk in, there is a law of reciprocity that God designed at the beginning of time, and what we walk in is going to impact what we walk in, what's going to be delivered our way. In Luke 6:38, it says, "Give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you." The law of reciprocity. What we walk in puts us in a spiritual arena. It's saying, if you're a tight wad with your money and you don't want to give to those who are hurting, it's going to impact what you walk in. Let's keep going. In Matthew 7, 1 through 6, it says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you." Wow. I didn't know that until I was 17 years old. But at 17 years old, I knew that. "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is sacred, and do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you in pieces." You know, the fact that walking in judgment places us in a spiritual arena that invites judgment should give us great pause in what comes out of our mouth and what we're walking in our heart. I mean, if we could realize that, you know what, when I'm looking down my nose at other people and things come out of my mouth in alignment with that, it's putting me in an arena that's inviting judgment and ugliness to be able to, it opens me up to stuff that I don't want to be open to. I'm going to bring you into my story a little bit with my family. I'm going to try to go at this from four different angles. We'll see whether I'm able to pull that off. But in order, the first angle I'm going to talk about is family. And I need to bring you into my story in order to do this. And I'm going to start out with my father, who, when he was 2 years old, his mom was dying in the hospital, and his brothers are lined up as she's dying, and she says, "I want every one of you to promise me you're never going to drink," because alcohol had ripped their family apart. And so as she's dying, that was her dying request. Well, my dad was 2 years old. The other brothers made that promise. I'm sure he did too, but he didn't remember that. As he was getting older, drinking was a part of his life, partying was a part of his life. And then he ended up giving his life to the Lord. I don't know, 20 years old? Somewhere in there. And after he gave his life to the Lord, he decided, you know, I'm going to go to the bars and I'm going to hang out with my buddies and lead them to the Lord. Well, before long, he was back into the same life that he'd been in before. And now he's got a girlfriend. A couple of years had gone by, and he's got a girlfriend who loves the Lord. And she thinks he's a believer, but he actually was, but at this point in his life, he was not really walking with the Lord. And he was showing her how he sold sewing machines. And as he was explaining to her his process, it was deceptive. It was corrupt. And this gal who loved the Lord looked at him and said, "You know, Bob, you call yourself a Christian, but you're not walking like one." And oh my goodness, it hit him between the eyes. And Dad began to realize that something was wrong with his walk. And as he went down this road, he began to realize the lostness that he was walking in. And one day, he's driving down the road, and the Lord just began to stir in his heart. He needed to get into church that day. And he was driving by a church. He didn't know this church. But as he's driving by, he knew that he needed to make a decision whether he was going to fully consecrate his life to the Lord or whether he was going to go his own way. And it was stirring in his heart. And he said, "You know, as I drove by that church, I knew I needed to get back and get into that church." And as a matter of fact, he said, "In my spirit, I knew that if I didn't, that I may not end up coming back to this moment." He said, "I just knew it." So I went back, and he said, "There was a huge spiritual battle for me to get into that church." He said, "Even as I was walking up to the door," he said, "I was wrestling with spiritual powers." He said, "And I knew it." He said, "The enemy did not want me in that service." Well, I got into that service, and he said, "And when I got into that service, I surrendered my life to the Lord. I consecrated my life to the Lord. And God touched me in such a significant way, I wanted to follow God for the rest of my life." Okay, so now we're going to skip forward a little bit. And Dad has been seeking the Lord, and he's really wanting to follow the Lord. He's been working for his father for a year. His dad said, "I can't pay you, but if you work for me for a year, I'll give you this cabin." And Dad said, "Okay." Cabin on Hugh Taylor Lane on the right, an orange cabin. It's still there. It looks just like it looked back then. Every time I drive by it, I think of this. So Dad is praying, and a year has gone by, and Dad just really wants to be used by the Lord. He's worked for his dad. The year is coming up. He's got to make some decisions. And he's saying, "Lord, what's next? What do you have for me next?" And the Lord said, "I want you to go to the little brown church over here, and I'm going to speak to you there." Dad thought, "Oh, Danny Ost is speaking. That guy is not an easy guy to listen to." But Dad knew that was the Lord. So Dad goes down to the little brown church, and he's sitting right in the center. And in the little brown church, Danny Ost gets up and he speaks, and he says, "You know, if your faith isn't costing you anything, it isn't worth very much. If you're not willing to lay things down in your life that cost you something, you're not going to see the strong hand of the Lord work in and through your life." Well, Dad's sitting there. He's going, "Oh, I knew I didn't want to come to this service." And he's frustrated with this whole thing. And as he's sitting there, the Holy Spirit just begins to speak to him and say, "Bob, you've got things that you're holding on to that if you're willing to let go of them, I'll do something with you." "Like what, Lord?" "I want you to give up your girlfriend. And I want you to give that cabin back to your dad that he's willing over to you, or that he's giving over to you for the work you've done." And Dad's sitting there and he goes, "Lord, I just worked for a year. And I love this woman and I want to marry her." And he's sitting there and Dad said he just began to weep. And as he's weeping, he said he knew that this was a pivotal moment in his life. Was he going to say, "Yes, Lord," or was he going to say, "No, Lord"? And as he's wrestling with it, he got to the place where he said, "Yes, Lord." And he said, "You know, God, at that moment, took every bit of love I had and placed it in Mexico. And Dad said, you know, it was just as significant as getting saved. He said, when I got saved, God touched me and I knew I was a changed man. He said, at this moment, when God touched me, I knew I was a changed man. I had a love for the Mexican people that had never been there before. I had a heart to reach people that I'd never had before. And he ended up going to Mexico. My mom was a beautiful woman, and when she was really young, she began to date. And by her 20s, she had some heartbreaks that impacted her significantly, and she had an emotional breakdown. And an emotional and a mental breakdown. She was not okay for some years. During that time of that breakdown, God got a hold of her, and she began to see her need for the Lord. She didn't want the party life anymore. She didn't want all of that stuff that she'd had before. She just got to a place where she just wanted the Lord. And God began to restore her, and God began to heal her and do a work in her life. So Mom goes to a retreat in California. Dad comes from Mexico and goes to this retreat in California, and they're sitting across from each other at this table, and they fall in love, and they get married. They go to Mexico. They have 5 kids in 7 years. Now, Mom, when she met Dad, she was only at about 80%. She was not at 100% yet. Dad didn't know that. And he sweeps her off her feet. They take off to Mexico. He has nothing. He doesn't have anything, and he's living by faith. Mom, you know, he came to her at her house, and she was swimming in a swimming pool, and he said, "Ann, I can't take you from here and take you to Mexico." She says, "Oh, Bob, this means nothing to me." And, well, then she went to Mexico and had 5 kids in 7 years, cloth diapers, not throwaway diapers, and tough life. At 9 years old, she moves here. When I was 9 years old, our family moves here, and, So when we moved here, Mom went through difficult things on the mission field. God used her. She loved it, but she was never going back. And when she was here, now she's got kids who are older, and the stresses of life were very hard on her. And Mom became difficult. And I'm bringing all of that out because now I'm a young guy growing up, and there's 5 kids in our home, and I don't understand the difficult things that Mom is expressing and going through, and I'd say, you know, kind of a rageaholic, not knowing how to deal with her emotions and anger and frustrations as us kids were pushing her buttons. And so, you know, I developed an anger problem. And by the time I'm 15 years old, so, you know, now Mom and I were triggering each other, rageaholics triggering each other. And at 15 years old, I'm reading the Word, and it says, "The anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God." And God opens up my eyes to my anger. And I've got to skip some, and that was a huge game changer. At 19 years old, the Lord... Then at 17 years old, the Lord opens up my eyes that I need to honor my mom. It's going to impact what I walk in, and he makes it very clear to me. But I didn't know how to walk in a healthy relationship with her at this point, so I just distanced myself from her, and I really didn't like her very much. At 27 years old, I go to take some time in the mountains to seek the Lord, and while I'm there, God's changing the whole course of my life. And at the end of this month that I'm up in the mountains by myself just seeking the Lord, I say, Father, is there anything else that you want to deal with me about? And at that point, I couldn't imagine there was anything else because God had opened up my eyes to so many things. I felt like the whole course of my life had just changed. And right when I said that, and let me tell you that this is not normal life for me. God does not deal with me in strong, overt ways typically like this. But God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. When I was up in the mountains, I had four separate fasts that were three-day fasts, and I'm just really seeking the Lord, and God is meeting me. And you know what? God just decided he's going to open up my eyes to some things I needed to see. And Lord, is there anything else you want to open up my eyes to while I'm here? And the Lord gives me a vision. I'd never had a vision like this before, but I saw the Lord, and I saw my mom, and I saw God's love for my mom. And I felt God's love for my mom. And I saw me in between the Lord and my mom, and a darkness in my soul that kept him from being able to love her through me. And I just wept. Just realizing the brokenness of what I was walking in and how much God desperately loved my mom. And you know, here's what's interesting. God didn't just love my mom that way. He loved me that way. And the brokenness that we were walking in toward each other was a huge grief to his heart because he loved both of us and he wanted us to be a blessing to each other, not be a curse to each other. But because of the lack of love that I had, I walked in an extreme judgment toward her. When I looked at her with this disdain and frustration. And when the Lord opened up my eyes to his love for her, it changed everything. And I'm just going to say, one of the most important things in our spiritual life is that God opens up our eyes to his love for the people around us. Because if we don't have his love for the people around us, judgment comes naturally. We can pick people apart. We can see the holes that they have very easily and capitalize on those holes at the expense of getting on God's side of this equation and having a strong heart to see them healed, delivered, and set free and walking in all that God has for them. Are we on God's side, or are we walking through the eyes of our own brokenness with an inability to touch them with the love of God? There's no way we're going to get through all this, but we're going to get through a little bit more, just a little bit more. The Pharisee and the tax collector. The Pharisee, in Luke chapter 18, 9 through 14, the Pharisee comes and the tax collector comes to the temple to pray. And the tax collector says, and I'm not going to have time to read, I'm just going to paraphrase. The tax collector says, Lord, I thank you so much, I'm not like that guy. I fast twice a week. I tithe. I pray. I do all of these beautiful things before you. And the tax collector stood over here and he said, God, have mercy on me, I'm a sinner. And it says that the Pharisee left. It doesn't say this, but this is what it's saying. The Pharisee left without authentically connecting with God. The tax collector authentically touched the heart of God, and he was walking in something authentic. The tax collector left with spiritual reality. The Pharisee left disconnected from the Lord. You know what? We can fast, we can pray, we can go to church, we can do all kinds of spiritual things, and we can miss it. And this tax collector over here, who's walking in significant brokenness, is aware of the brokenness that he's walking in, and he won't even lift his eyes to the Lord because he sees the deep level of brokenness that he's walking in, and he says, Father, have mercy on me. I'm a sinner. And it says he left justified before God. He left with something authentic. God was authentically at work in his life. And the Pharisee, who had the first five books of the Bible memorized, and he had all kinds of things lined up, because of his looking down his nose at this guy, had not only nothing to give, he was bankrupt spiritually. He wasn't walking in anything that touched anything real spiritually. The tax collector was touching something real, and God was at work in him to do something and to take him from where he was at and do something in his life. You know, there's a question that this begs the question, are we nurturing the growth in the people around us with a heart to see them move into all that God has for them? Or are we just looking down our nose at them and capitalizing on their brokenness? Because we're full of ourselves and we're missing it. Father, there isn't anything as important as meeting with you in our lives in authentic ways. There isn't anything as important as what you have to say and what you want to do in our lives. Lord, we recognize that man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. You are the one that we want to get to know. And Lord, where there's spiritual blocks in our lives, where there's things in our lives that are disruptive and in the way and causing a rift between you and us, Lord, in your mercy, will you move to open up our eyes to see these things?